All right, so my name is Steve Fox. I'm super excited to be here. These Firestarter events are always fun. First of all, they're right around the corner for us and for hopefully for most of you. I know there's some folks online that are also joining us, so welcome virtually to all of you. Here's my blog address and my email in case you have any questions. Please feel free to follow up after the session. And we're going to be talking about SharePoint and Windows Azure, okay? So just to get a poll, a feel for the room, who here has actually created an Azure application before in their life? Okay, about 8 of you. For those of you online, that's roughly 20% of the room. But that's good. That means that most of you will walk away learning something today. So it's positive. What I'm going to cover today, you know, I just thought I'd keep it high level here. I'm going to give you a bit of a background, maybe 20% of the 60 minutes, and then 80%. I'm just going to walk through some samples. I often find that describing things is one thing, but then kind of walking through, you see how it's done, and it gives you an opportunity to ask some questions and see how code kind of is stitched together, especially with something like this where we are indeed taking, you know, Windows Azure, which is a platform technology unto itself, with SharePoint, which is also, you can consider, a platform technology, and bringing them together in different ways. So with that said, I wanted to couch today's session with this frame in mind. It's an interesting quote from Gartner and fairly impactful. Obviously, if I was to give this presentation to business people, I would go down a separate fork. But starting here, I'll take you down the technical fork. But imagine next year 80% of Fortune 1000 enterprises having some cloud-based asset or cloud computing service. It's a fairly impactful statement because when we say cloud, which just to define what I mean by cloud, it's hardware and software that lives in the web and not necessarily living inside your corporate firewall or underneath your desk or in a lab somewhere where you have immediate access to, but something that's kind of, you know, hosted. I mean, this is a fairly significant shift. It's a disruptive shift, as Gartner would term it. And so when you're thinking about developing and designing and architecting and all the opportunities to change your practice, you know, whether it be your SharePoint practice or Azure practice, there's opportunities within Azure to do a lot of different things. So this, to me, was an interesting way to frame this entire session. Now, with that said, given the fact that we had roughly, you know, 8 to 10 people who put their hands up in the room, I thought it beneficial to just give a tip of the hat to what is a Windows Azure slide here. So, you know, often I've heard Windows Azure is an operating system in the cloud, which is a very, I think, loose way to describe it, a very high-level way to describe it, because of so much more. But it's an easy reductionist way to think about Windows Azure. It essentially is, you know, resources that you can leverage in the cloud. So, for example, if you build today a WCF service and you deploy it into SharePoint, you may deploy that WCF service to a local IIS instance in a box that lives in a lab somewhere. You can go down and talk to your IT pro administrator and say, you know, give me permissions, yada, yada, yada. You have direct kind of touchy-feely connections with that particular server. In the case of Azure, you could equally build your WCF services, but when you deploy them, now you're deploying them to a data center that Microsoft hosts in some region of the world that has CDN, so you could make performance enhancements to people getting access to that server quicker. But the point is, now all of a sudden, you're beyond your corporate firewall. So you're taking code and you're putting it into the cloud. Now, if we think about what Windows Azure is beyond this operating system, beyond the facility where you can drop services, you have things like SQL Azure. So, for example, again today, I can go and have my SQL Server instance. I have relational databases where I can manage things like business intelligence reports from. I can take that data and I can migrate that out to SQL Azure and then host that data in the cloud. So I have this repository in the cloud, in effect, where I can put data, I can put services, I can put code. You know, there's also a data market that I'll show you here in just a bit where you don't have to do anything with code. You can just subscribe to other people putting code and data in the cloud and begin to use that for reporting. And so, you know, while operating system in the cloud is a place to start, we certainly don't stay there for very long when we're talking about Windows Azure. There's a lot that you can do with it. And as you embark on your journey to learn more Azure, you're going to find this out. you're going to find it's about data. It's about code. It's about all sorts of things that are kind of brought into one. But at the end of the day, it's about taking applications, building solutions, and using the cloud as your place of entry. Now, why would you go about doing that? The difference with Azure is it's this type of metered system. So, for example, today, I take code, I put it into my lab, and it runs maybe, you know, a couple times a day, but I'm paying 100% for that server. I'm paying somebody to actually maintain that server. So as a CTO, and this is the questions that they get, you know, when they're trying to rationalize costs in their infrastructure, they're thinking, well, why don't I repurpose that guy to do other things, and we'll take that server, you know, and do something with that. And so the point is you have this small piece of code that's only used maybe a month out of the year, yet the total cost to run that code is 100% of that server. And so the metered services basically of the cloud is let's put some code into the cloud, and you only get charged for what you use. So, for example, you have a tax application you want to expose out to a bunch of people. You're only charged for the 2 or 3 months out of the year that it's actually used, as opposed to the other 9 or 10 when it sits dormant. Okay? That fundamentally is all I wanted to say about Azure. Kind of gives you that high-level premise of what it is. But again, we'll walk through some specifics. I'll take you through some examples. Now, the question is, you know, how do you characterize this relationship between Windows Azure and SharePoint? Because there's a lot of different ways, right? Again, these are two platforms. These are two fairly large beasts. So putting them together, you know, how does that make sense? And so I characterize it right now, because it obviously changes. We evolve and solutions grow and architectural and design patterns begin to emerge as reach, resource, and reusability. Now, what does that mean? Reach means I can take a service, as I mentioned, and I can either put it underneath my desk in my IIS, or I can take it and I can expose it out to the cloud. I can make it globally accessible, if you will. I can take, you know, maybe leverage the Azure Data Marketplace, which I'll show you in just a sec, and use that, again, having this wider reach for data. Types of things that you could build, social intelligence dashboards, for example. You know that SharePoint's very good at building dashboards, so you use this, you know, globally accessible service to bring information into your dashboard. You could use a document tracking solution where you have Azure service running in the cloud that scans a document, pushes it into SharePoint, and then it gets routes inside a workflow, and the collaboration around approving and reviewing a resume, for example, or a legal document begins. So you can see that there's this relationship between cloud and collaboration that can emerge by basically leveraging the fundamentals and the functionality of Azure with the collaboration of SharePoint. Now, resource is interesting because this is where we can take data and we can put that into the cloud, right? So I used the example of BI with SQL Azure earlier on. Or you could take blob storage. Now, I'm not suggesting that we replace RBS with Azure, but what I'm suggesting is if you're building, in this case, a training solution, you could literally take your video files and put those into blob storage. And so you're not having to incur this constant monitoring of servers within your firewall, within your corporate network. And also, you can look at archiving documents, big documents. So if you have terabytes of data, you might think about blob storage as an alternative. Reusability is, we talk about this trifecta form factor, right? The PC, the phone, and the web. I'm sure you've heard about this before when we talk about SharePoint. Using Azure as that service layer can actually help achieve that, right? Having one service where we don't have multiple code bases to support. We have one central code base that can serve a Windows Phone 7, can serve a SharePoint site, or can serve a WPF app. Okay? So that really gives you the frame. The rest of this session, really what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk you through different examples ranging from the simple to the more complex. I've got these things pre-built, so we'll walk through a little bit of code. I don't want to make your ears bleed, but if you want more information afterwards, you can come and talk to me, okay? So that said, the first demo I wanted to talk about was this crime stats dashboard. Let's go ahead and take a look. So the first thing I want to take a look at here is, where is my... Here it is. So this here is I'm remoted into my desktop in my office, and what I've got up and running here is basically the datamarket.azure.com, or what you're seeing is the Windows Azure Marketplace Data Market. Now, this is an example of where I don't really need to do any code, but Azure actually helps me do something. So if you're looking to expand your business, for example, you could take data sets, and you could restify them, and you could basically put them in this Azure Data Market. Now, what you're seeing here are data subscription models, where if I wanted to, for example, get some crime data. And I'll show you this in just a second. I can go ahead and look at crime data that's been put online that allows me to filter in certain ways and create reports. You know, as I was talking about social intelligence, you yourself could build a data set that would actually mine the internet for these different types of social information that may help, you know, inform marketing efforts. So in this case, you can see here that you can sign in with a live ID. Here you can see, hello, Steve Fox. You can see my account. I've got a number of different subscriptions here. If you go into a particular subscription, which is the crime data, you can see that you've got a number of facilities here. I can explore the data set. Either just in the web UI, I can go ahead and use Power Pivot with an Excel 2010 to explore it. And Power Pivot essentially just allows you to pull large amounts of data onto your client and then churn through that with better caching ability on the client. And I can do other things here. I can program against it in Visual Studio. So I want to explore the data set. We can go ahead and click Explore this data set. That opens up essentially this ability to interact with that data set. And you can see here's my REST URI up here where I can enter in queries by virtue of the UI. So let's go here and put Washington as the state. And I can go ahead and click Run the query. And that's going to go ahead and query that data source, which is hosted in Azure, and returns the results of that query. So here you can see that in the web UI, I've queried based on state being Washington. It's given me all the crime statistics of 3 years, 2006, 2007, and 2008. And this may be interesting, for example, if you're a real estate agent trying to find out if you want a house or put someone in a house in a certain area. But there's all sorts of other data sets that could be interesting as well. But this one here, you can see again by looking at the URI, it's pulled back some data, top equals 100. So it's just taken the first 100 rows where that filter is Washington. So the question is, okay, that's kind of interesting, you know, but how does that relate to SharePoint? Because you're supposed to be talking about SharePoint and Azure, Steve, so can you get to the SharePoint part? So sure. So basically what we can do is we can take this, and literally if we go back to our landing page here, let's go back to the home page. When you go in here, you can see that if we click on one, there's this Data Market Excel add-in. You can download that to your client, and that allows you to automatically query your subscriptions that you've signed up for inside of Excel 2010. So for example, let me just go over here. I'll kill that for a second. And I'll open up this Excel document. And you can see when I go to my data tab, I've got this import data from Azure Marketplace. And you see it's got my account key. When you create an account with the Azure Data Marketplace, they give you a developer key. And what that means is you can code against it, or you can use it here in the add-in to download data. So I could sign in. And so here I'm just going to sign in within Excel. And that would go ahead and it would basically load in all my data from my Azure Data Marketplace. Okay, now we're starting to get vaguely interesting, not quite to the point where you guys are all excited, I can still tell. Looks like you're planning the weekend out there, I'm not quite sure. So let's go ahead and kill. This is a toggle button, so I can just toggle this on and off. So I can go ahead, but I can import the data into my Excel spreadsheet. That's what I've done. So you can see here that I've got a bunch of data. I can go ahead and I can create pivots, so I can go ahead and go insert pivot table, pivot chart, and whatnot. And ultimately what happens is I can get to the place where I have an Excel document that I, you know, have some reporting on. Now, this is where we get into the SharePoint part, because right now, again, we're on the client, we're Excel, but I want to share this. I want to share this with all of you here and all the people online. So I can go ahead and I can go File, Save and Send, you know, save to SharePoint, and then publish options. And for those of you who are familiar with 2007 SharePoint, you will have heard of Excel Services. Of course, that persists forward into 2010. And here I can select the objects that I've created in the context of my Excel document and push that out into SharePoint. And then essentially what I can do is I can expose those objects. So for example, I can expose this chart. You know, or I can expose the tables as named items. And I can go ahead and I can create a dashboard. So we can go here and we can see my, you know, super cool crime dashboard, King County crime. I know you're like, oh my God, it's worse than New York City out here on the east side. And so here, you know, I've got some cities. It's my chart. But the interesting thing here, this is an image via a web part. So what I'm doing here is I'm using the document that I saved to a document library as my point of reference, but I'm doing it through the new REST URI capabilities, right? So here you can see that if we zoom in on this, I've got this URI that I've got here that is basically referring to the chart object inside of my Excel document, okay? And so basically I just created an image web part, and I used the image web part as, let's go back there, the image web part, and I used the REST URI to point to the particular chart object. Now, of course, I can also use the Excel services to load in my name range objects. So here I've got, you know, a table. I've got another table that I've built out of my pivot table. So in essence, what I'm doing is, by virtue of taking like the data from Azure and pulling it into a document and putting that document into SharePoint, I'm then using that as my central point of reference. Okay? Now it's not necessarily a synchronous relationship. It's not always being, you know, connected. You kind of have to go back and do some of your charts, or at least synchronize every so often. But the point is, it gives you that connection to Azure. Now, of course, that's not the only thing that you can do. You can interact with that data programmatically. So you can see here that I've got this little Silverlight application. I can go ahead and click Get Data. And boom, I can get all that data that actually lived in my Azure Data Marketplace and pull it into my data grid. Now, of course, it's a little sad. You know, it's a little Silverlight data grid, so all your hard code devers are going, oh, come on, give me something more than that. We'll get there, okay, near the end. But this is basically just showing that you can actually program against that code. The question is, how do you go about doing that? So in this case, what I've done is, hopefully you've heard by now, or at least you will in the next session, there is a Silverlight web part, native to SharePoint 2010. So all I need to do is build a Silverlight application. I can put it in a documents library, and I can reference that and automatically props into my Silverlight web part. We look at the actual code. Let me see, where is my code here? Here it is here. What I've done is I've actually created a little service and deployed the service to my local IIS instance here. And this service would go out, and it would use an HTTP web request object using that URI, the same URI I was using in the context of my, you know, of the Dallas Azure Marketplace, and through a very complex link statement. I'm sure all your link guys are going, there's an easier way to do that. And of course there is. But I'm going to leave all you smart people to optimize that, because I have to leave you to do something, right? I can't do everything for you, right? Maybe? All right, so basically this is going to go through, and I'm going to leverage this service in the context of my Silverlight object. Okay, so simply put, here's my service, and again, I'm not going to go through all the code here, just to give you an idea, and we'll go in and we'll go into my very simple, where is it, my crime app, is that it there? Yep, there it is. And if you look behind the scenes, all I'm doing is I've got a reference to my service, I've got my proxy, here I've got my, let's just zoom in on that a little bit so you can see it, is that better at the back? Okay, so I've got my proxy. I'm going through. The e.result is taking the results from the call, so it's going out using that URI, pulling back that data, and I'm just cycling through an internal object, setting some properties, and then binding that to my data grid. Okay, so you can imagine, literally, if you wanted to create a nice little filterable Silverlight application, you absolutely could. You would get more complicated here. You would add some controls. If you want to do some pre-filtering, post-filtering, whatever, you could do that in much the same way once you have that in-memory object right there in front of you. You could certainly do that. So that ended up, you know, just a really quick kind of get started with some things out of the box in terms of Dallas Azure in a marketplace sense, and then things that require a little bit of code to build out this simple simple crime dashboard. Okay, so that was my first little solution. So let's go back to, I would hardly call it a solution, an example. All right, so let's go here, slideshow, current slide. The next example I wanted to show you was one that was Contoso Stores External List. Now, when Donovan was talking just in the last session there, I saw that he introduced you to the external list. You've probably heard this a couple times today, right? The external list and BCS, yep. So the business connectivity services can actually be used to tie into either an ADO.NET or a SQL Server-based connection. What does that mean? It means literally if I built a WCF service and I deployed it into Azure, I could literally create a connection that would allow me to build an external list that looked just like this. And I could have this read-write relationship, of course, if I built the web methods to correspond to that. Much more simply, though, I could use SharePoint Designer, just like Donovan showed you, to walk through the process of creating an external list that actually connected to my SQL Azure. Now, of course, there's one little catch, right? When we're working with SQL Server inside our domain, it passes our credentials. because SQL Azure has this separate set of credentials, we have to mediate that separate set of credentials. Make sense? So what happens is when we actually go to actually building this, before I go through the process that Donovan walked you through of creating that BCS list in SharePoint Designer, and just to refresh your memory, it was here where he clicked external content types and clicked external content type and added the connection. You can see I have this SQL Server connection here where I can add the database server, add the name, but here's the problem. I can't connect to a separate SQL Azure instance using my CorpNet credentials. I have to manage that separate set of credentials. Does anybody want to shout out what is the facility in SharePoint that would help me do that? Kerberos is a little beyond, but you could if you wanted to. Secure Store Service, whoever said that. SSS, right? So essentially what we would do is we would go, well, I'm going to connect with a person an impersonated custom identity. Now, how you'd create one of these, you basically go into Central Admin. We go over, where is my Central Admin? I guess I have to open it up. So we'll open up Central Admin. Of course. And when Central Admin opens up, I can go into, Manage Service Applications. And in here we have this option, the Secure Store Service down here. And all I do is I create an entry. And I can go ahead and just create new, and I will walk through this process. We can say Firestarter, and we'll say blah, and we'll say blah at blah.com. And we'll go next. I'm not going to save this, so this is just for illustrative purposes. This is the key thing you want to see. And what I can do here is I can go SQL Azure username and SQL Azure password, and I set the username and password as opposed to Windows, and click Next. And then I would add in a person who has administrative rights to basically administer that particular secure store service. And then I basically finish up and click OK, and I've got my app ID. Right? And so you can see if I go back, I've got a bunch of app IDs already. I've got Azure App ID, whatever. And so when I'm connecting up to this instance in the cloud, I would just literally go Azure App ID. Here, when I click OK, it'll prompt me for credentials, and it'll create that external content type for me. And whenever I'm presented in the context of the external list once I create it, it'll ask me to authenticate. But essentially, that app ID represents that bridge. And of course, for the gentleman who talked about Kerberos, then we're talking about SAP and PeopleSoft. It's much bigger weight, right? For something like this, you can absolutely negotiate it with simply designating credentials and then giving people permissions to the external list. So that's one thing, right? The first thing is I can create my connection, and I can go ahead and create my external list just by, as Donovan showed you, you click Create Lists, and it ends up here. If we jump back into here, you'll see that it's the sports store locations. So here's my external list. However, there's one other security thing that he didn't show you, right? So the first thing is make sure you create an app ID that mediates that relationship back to SQL Azure with the separate set of credentials. The second thing is, I could create this, but even I don't have credentials if I haven't done anything, right? So that's where I have to go back to Central Admin, wherever you are, here we are. Go back to Browse, Central Admin. And because I've created what's called an external content type, I have to assess permissions against that particular external content type that I've created. So here I go into Stores. And then I can set object permissions on that particular object. And there you go, as the administrator of this laptop, and as me as Steve Fox DPE, I can give myself edit, execute, let me just expand that so you can see. I can give myself all those permissions so that then I, when I expose that list, when I go to the list, I can update the list, I can delete a record, whatever, and that's actually going to delete records from SQL Azure. The point is, you probably want to be very careful who you give permissions to at this level, but this ultimately controls, if you go back to the list, you go back here, it ultimately controls who has the ability to open up this item, to view it, edit it, delete it, and whatnot, right? And so this, again, is really a no-code way, very simply to get up and running, to expose SQL Azure data into SharePoint through an external list. Drop dead. And, drop dead easy in turn. Don't drop dead doing it. It's drop dead easy. But the point is, you know, when you think about power users, IT pros, as well as devs, this is kind of all-encompassing across those audiences. So it's a nice way to bridge the two without really having to do too much in the way of doing it no-code-wise. So that was that. Now, the nice thing is, both Donovan and Chris touched on the client object model. Once I've got it in an external list for the developers out there, I can now code against it. All right? Now I have Azure data inside an external list that I can code against. Now, coding against an external list is a little different. There's some, you know, a little few things that are tiny different, you know, about actually leveraging the external list, and I'll show you that in a bit. But the point is, I can now build applications against this particular list. My next demo I'll show you is all basically about that. And this is where I've built, you know, a Silverlight application that does a number of things, right? Here we've got a Silverlight application. It's loading up on load. It's loading up those records from SQL Azure via my BCS, via my external list, right? So in that sense, it's nice because now my external list is multifunctional. I can have end users who can read, write if they want to. I can have developers who can build fancy apps using Bing Maps and Silverlight chart toolkits or Silverlight 4 or Silverlight 5 or Silverlight 6 out now. I'm not too sure. And then Silverlight 6. Yeah. And so here what I can do is I can select a record. I can click zoom and hold on. Whoa. Did you guys catch that? Do you want to do it again? All right, pretty exciting stuff on. So basically what I do is I click this, and it refocuses the Zoom, the Bing Maps, based on the particular record, right? And because inside of the record is information that's basically pertaining to lat and long for a particular store. So if you wanted to build a dashboard, let's say, of, you know, of clients, and let's say you're a salesman, you want to figure out where these guys are located, or it could be any type of record where you need some sort of geospatial service or geoservice, you could use Bing as that source. Now, the other thing you may or may not have noticed was that every time I clicked one of these guys, the toolkit updated with some information there. You can see that I go ahead and click that guy. So I can get sales information about a particular customer as well, their location, and it's all based on that SQL Azure data coming through into SharePoint through my external list. Pretty nifty, huh? So you guys want to look at the code here? Check it out. Are you hungry for code? Woo! All right, let's do it. Okay. Am I the only one that's excited here or what? All right, okay, let's kill this guy. You don't want to save that one. So we'll go over here, and we're going to open up, where was it, solution files. I think it was this guy here. Let me see. Let's just make sure. Kill that. Main page. Yeah, this was this guy. So basically, I'm not going to go into the details too much here other than to say that if you look at the UI here, I've basically got some controls in it. I've got a data grid that's got text boxes in it, so I'm binding to the text box inside that data grid. I've got a little button. That's where my Zoom, you know, event handler. But you can also see I've got this little blue box, and that's where I'm actually popping up on mouse over and mouse enter, you know, events that kind of exposes information about the particular store. I'm using the Bing Maps Silverlight control. So when I show you the code, you'll see that there's some very specific objects that are, you know, particular to Bing Maps. And then I'm using the Silverlight chart control. I actually really like the Silverlight chart control. It's pretty nifty. I wasn't too sure when I first started using it, but as I started using it, I realized that it's fairly flexible in the way you can actually create dictionaries and populate the chart. So that was nice. Now, if you go back and take a look at the code, this is really super interesting stuff. Now, let me see here. As we go through, you've seen the client object model already, so you can see that at the top here of my solution, I've got a couple things. I've got the client context. This is the client object model that sets the context. If you've used the server object model before, then you won't have seen this too much, but you'll understand the setting of context. This is how we can do things here with this new object model, which I can call for remote clients in this case, which is Silverlight. I've got some, you know, in-memory objects here, list collection, IEnumerable, that are just going to allow me to populate some data coming from the outside world, mainly from that external list, that I'm going to leverage inside of my Silverlight application. Of course, I've got some other stuff going on. The map layer object is something that's specific to Bing. But I think the key stuff that's interesting to you all, let's look at this one thing where we're, this one method here where we're getting SharePoint list data. So you can see that I'm setting my context here to Blue Yonder Demo. You could use current, but I'm basically just setting it, hard coding it to my local SharePoint instance. Then I'm going through and I'm getting the sports store locations. So I'm getting that list by title, sending a very open camel query, grabbing all of that information through the query, and then I'm storing it in this BCS store list. And that's just, again, an in-memory object that I'll use. But the key thing is this execute query async. This, of course, is particular to the asynchronous nature of Silverlight. So the client object model, as it batches up all of these different commands, you batch process them by calling this execute query async. And of course, given the fact that this is an asynchronous call, we've got a request succeeded or a request failed. So if we go ahead and look at the request succeeded, because we know all you guys are awesome coders, you never have any failures. In fact, you don't even need the failed, right? Am I the only one excited here? Come on. All right. So here, if we go ahead and fill the list, this is where when I was talking about interacting with an external list is a little bit different, right? So you can see here that we have store details. We're creating an in-memory object for each var x in the BCS store list. That's our list collection that we've created. So I'm just rolling through that. But you'll see that I have x.fieldValues.element at 3, 4, 5, 8. And it's not necessarily sequential, right? Literally what you have to do is when you're coding against an external list, just make sure you set a breakpoint so you can actually check out what the structure of that data structure is, because they won't all be harmonious in the regular world, right? It's gonna be, oh, there's that one that I need in element 2 and 4. Sometimes it's sequential, but sometimes not. So just make sure you set a breakpoint, because what will happen is you bring this data back thinking it's 1, 2, 3, or 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, it'll come back and it's the wrong data, and your code will break. Does that make sense? Okay, cool. So that then is the population of the data. Above being population that of that data, the next thing I'm doing, I'm just going to add that stuff into my Bing Maps. And this is pretty easy, right? There's a great interactive Bing Maps SDK out there. Has lots of code samples you can check out. I love interactive SDKs like this where it shows you examples. You click on the example, shows you the XAML, shows you the code behind. It's a great way to learn, as well as videos. But here what we've got is we've got push pins. So for each of those objects, I'm going to add a push pin to my Bing Map. So you're going to have push pins all over and lots of great stuff, and everybody will be happy. Now, I'm going to jump down to this is where we actually create and populate the chart. Because, again, I really like the chart control. Now, ordinarily, what you could do is you could cycle through in much the same way I created a list collection, grabbed a particular element, pulled it back, populated an in-memory object, blah-de-blah. But here you can see I've kind of cheated, right? I've created a random number, and I've set four variables, FY08, FY09, FY10, FY11. You need a dictionary of a string and an int to populate a tool or with this particular chart, the column series, and that's all I did. So I kind of cheated, but in much the same way, you could literally populate an object and then cycle through and then refer to the specific elements in those int values and, then of course, assign those back to that dictionary, and then it would subsequently populate that chart. And I do have an example to show that to you later if you want to see that. But for this one, I'm like, I got to cheat. I got to get it done because it was like 8 o'clock this morning. I was getting nervous. All right, so that's that. And then, of course, all I did here was build my ZAP file. And this is what I was talking about, the ZAP file, this here. I can go ahead and just build it out. And what happens is it builds out this .xap file. And what I can do is go over into my SharePoint site, and I'm sure Paul's going to show this to you because this is one of the, you know, a very simple way of getting a Silverlight application into SharePoint. I go click Add Document, and I'll just upload the location of that ZAP file into SharePoint. And then what I do is I would just go into my home stores, I think, here, and I would go page, edit the page, do some cool things like add a web part, and we'll go media and content, Silverlight web part, click add, and then you would just add the URL back to that ZAP file that you added into the documents library. I'm not going to steal Paul's thunder because he's got some great demos. One of the key things I'm sure he'll show you is how you can wrap a Silverlight application within a web part and deploy it, so you've actually got the web part hosting, which I think is a much tastier way of doing it, because then it's an easier debug and deploy process. But this is just a simple way to get the Zap into your Silverlight application. Okay? So that one is kind of cool, because now what you've got is you've got multiple things interacting all around this idea of SharePoint, Bing, Toolkit, and whatnot. So we can go here. We've got Azure Data, pull it in, and there you have it. So do I have until 4:15 or 4:30? It's 4:15, right? I better giddy up and get going here then. All right, so the next one I have, let's go back to my, we'll kill this. Next one I go back here, current one. I believe the next one I'll talk about blob storage. Now this one I haven't talked too much about publicly yet because I was still trying to figure it out. But in essence, you can use blob storage in Azure to take binary objects or files, whatever you wanted to, and push them into Azure so you could, again, offset storage locally in your server environment or your local environment. In this case, what I built was I built this image file manager. Now, the interesting thing is I built it from two perspectives, as you'll see in just a sec. I basically took an Azure ASP.NET application. I basically sucked it into SharePoint through a page viewer web part, so I had direct access to my ASP.NET application or my page. I was able to, you know, load blob storage into Azure, and then on another site, I was able to consume that same blob storage in a Silverlight application and image viewer. So in essence, what it allows me to do is manage images from SharePoint through effectively an iframe into Azure, as well as pull those data back into SharePoint through another application. Now, while you're seeing me do the Frankenstein way, you could literally build a web part that used some of those core libraries within the blob storage, within Azure blob storage, to absolutely take files directly from SharePoint, push into Azure. You don't need to kind of have this iframe approach. This is just one approach I was doing to test things out. Okay? So if you go and take a look and see what this looks like. All right, where were we? Home. So this site here, literally, this is my ASP.NET application. Now, if I went out and actually showed you... You what? No, it's not. But I actually haven't tried that. It's been on my list of things to do, because that would be one of the few ways in which you could integrate it with SharePoint. If you want to ping me afterwards, maybe we can talk offline about it. Before I jump and talk too much about, you know, the application I built, I just wanted to show you the Windows Azure developer portal, right? So the thing is, when you're building an Azure application, remember I said that I can code it in my Visual Studio that is sitting on my laptop, then I can publish it out into the big bad world, in this case, which is Azure. Here, once I've published into Azure, I can manage all of my different services. So you can see here, let's just zoom in. You can see I've got a bunch of things here. I've got mortgage interest, WCF service, Fabricam legal service. These are literally WCF services that I have in the cloud that have an endpoint, that have code, functionality. I can literally just by virtue of using that reference, endpoint reference, pull back and consume in SharePoint or any other application for that matter. But in this case, I can consume it in SharePoint. So here what I've done is I've actually just built an ASP.app, not an MVC, just a regular old ASP.app. And if you go down here, let's go down to my V1, I think it's down here somewhere. If I click that, there we go. I can click that, and from my developer portal, you can see that it spawns the actual application. Okay? Now, what I've done, if we go back to my SharePoint site, is you can see that I've now got this kind of nestled into my SharePoint site by virtue of a page viewer web part. And literally all that means is I go page, edit, I go add a web part, I go into my media and content, page viewer, click add, and I just paste in the URL to my actual ASP.NET application. Right? And so here what I can do now, I've got this, basically this blob application, and go ahead and browse to my local drive here, and let's say, I don't know, scenarios, brand business, let's say men casual laptop smile copy. Not sure what that is, but we'll put it in there. Hopefully it's nothing too bad, because this is being broadcast fairly widely. But we'll say, man, smiling, hopefully beside copy machine. I don't know what it is, though. So, and we'll say this is marketing. so I can associate some metadata, and then of course I can click submit image. And what's happening now is Azure is taking an image from my local laptop and it's pushing it into blob storage in my Azure blob storage in the cloud. And you can see I've got all these other ones here. And where was that man smiling behind? Should we be brave and open it up? Why not? Open a new tab. And hopefully that'll open up. Where is it? There it is. And you go, oh, that's not so bad. He's a good-looking fella. But what you can see here is that if you go down here, you can see that the URI is actually pointing to my my remote Azure instance of Azure, okay? And it's directly coming from Blob Storage, so I'm pulling that from Blob Storage. Now the question, that's fine. Okay, you've taken that off my local server and you've pushed it into the cloud. How can I actually consume that in SharePoint? So again, here I can go ahead and click my viewer subsite, and now I've got this nice little nifty SharePoint site, or the Silverlight app. I can load the images. Now, when I click load the images, what's going on? I have a local service that goes out, grabs some information from my Azure Blob Storage because it's Restified, so I can use REST URI again against that Azure Blob Storage, and I can pull back information. Now, specifically, I'm pulling back metadata and links, right? Because ultimately, I want to expose that data inside of this application. So here we go. Man smiling beside copy machine. I'm saying, this is kind of lame. I'm going to give it a 2. It's not really worth a 5. It's a 2. And we'll say it's all right. Now, this is interesting, right? Because now basically what I've done is I've exposed an image that's living in Blob Storage in an application that's living in SharePoint. While you may not want to do this with an image, think about the training solution. Remember I mentioned that? Training solutions, blobs, they're sometimes big files. So why not put those in blobs, serve them up into a Silverlight training application that allows you to select from a particular option and thereby gives your company a training solution that saves them money? Eh, maybe. You're the rock star. You get the promotion, all right? Maybe not? All right. No. I mean, you can use, but I'm not in this case. So now what I can do is I can basically take the data here and I can click save. It'll actually save it back into my list. If you go back here to Azure Images, I can push that information. So the point is I can round trip data, I can expose it and play it inside of Silverlight, or I can take information and then further push that into a list if you wanted to, right? And this is all using the client object model in the context of pushing that back. Now, what does that code look like? Again, I think the most important code here for you to take a look at, and I think there's a really interesting article in MSDN magazine, I think either in November or December, that shows you how to do some archival storage. It actually takes this very snippet or very close snippet of code and shows you how to push data into archive blob storage from within SharePoint in a workflow. But this, in essence, is the code, right? In the Azure world, you go ahead and you have this cloud blob container, cloud storage account, all these different objects that allow you to set up the blob storage. And then basically what you do is you go ahead, create the storage, assess permissions on that storage. So you're essentially creating something that exists. In this case, the container is called image files. And then I'm going to go through, I'm going to populate that with what I've added into my default.aspx. Okay? So I'm just cycling through, taking some data from my Azure application and pushing it into blob storage. And then if we go down here, let me just move down a little bit, because again, I'm moving through this code fairly quickly. You can see that when I update the image list, you know, I've got a connection string here, but I'm updating the image list. I'm just taking a var of all my blobs. I'm rolling through and I'm grabbing the URI, the image name, the image category, the date submitted, and I'm pushing that in as metadata, which I'll then pull back and use in the context of SharePoint in my Silverlight application. Okay? If you really want this code, you can email me. I'll get it to you. The fact that there's 8 people put their hands up just tells me that a lot of you are kind of new to Azure, so you're probably not yet into it, but just about to get into it. But I'm happy to expose this to you, so if you want to dig deeper in it, no problem there at all. But let me see what else. I do have delete image functionality. I didn't show you that. And here's the link submit. But there again, you know, this is basically taking some metadata and uploading and updating an image file. So lots of code there. I'm not going to go into detail. crazy in under 60 minutes to try and do that. But I think you get the picture. The key code there was that blob storage container, and I'll expose that to whoever wants it. All right, so I think I have one more demo. Let's just make sure. Let's go back here for my current slide. I showed you that one. Was that it? I thought I had one more. Let's go back here. Oh, I wanted to show you this one. This was, I'm working on a little BI application. And this was using the toolkit, and again, using SQL Azure data, but cycling through and actually populating it with real data as opposed to a random number. So I'll just quickly show you that code before I jump out and close out with my summary slide. For those of you who are interested, here you can see that I'm rolling through. Let's just make that bigger. Here you can see that I've got this line series. I wanted to create three line series, but for each fiscal data one element in fiscal sales class array, so it's just an array. So for every element in that array, I'm going ahead and I'm adding that a specific object, string variable, and an int variable to the actual chart. And so I'm just revving that each time. So literally it just says, well, I've got an array. Instead of hard coding a random number and adding that, I'm cycling through and I'm able to populate a line series with that particular array. And so you can see down here the line series, this.chart fiscal year sales, which is the name of the actual chart. And when you're actually populating charts, they come in arrays. So you can actually have lines that are each an array. So this is the third one of those lines, and it sets the item source to the object, in-memory object I'm populating. Again, I'm happy to share this code with you if this is something that's of interest. I was thinking about putting a blog together for this because I think it's interesting enough that people would want to see it. So with that, lots of, 60 minutes has gone by very, very quickly. And the one thing I did want to do was actually talk a bit about this particular slide. Because in kind of a snapshot of four examples, I walked you through something that was fairly simple, the Dallas marketplace, with code name Dallas, but the Azure data market, where you can either use Excel or you can use the web request URI to build out an application, a dashboard, showing you Bing Maps and client object model with Azure, all the way out to, Azure Blob Storage. Just showing you this stuff is possible, right? I think that's more important than anything else. For those of you who are actually trying to use this, you can ping me for the code. Now, what else is possible, right? So there's lots of things that you can do here. You're seeing here I've got the client object model, BCS, Silverlight, sandbox solutions. This is key when we think about SharePoint Online. You can build sandbox solutions that leverage Azure in the context of SharePoint Online or Office 365. And in much the same way that I took that Bing map and I linked it back to my list, of course it would have to be a regular list as opposed to an external list, but I could absolutely do that and then populate lists. If I wanted to push information from my Silverlight app from Azure and have that round trip effect. So there's some great things you can do there in the context of Office 365. Also, Donovan showed you Office custom clients. Again, you can read BCS external lists into a document. You can do direct calls using SQL, the data adapter, into SQL Azure. You could call your WCF service. I didn't even touch on the WCF service today because we didn't have enough time. But definitely there's lots of things you can do there. In terms of standard and visual web parts, you could also go about building those. Now, the one caution I will throw out there with standard web parts, you saw me use a lot of Silverlight, and it's not because I'm standing here saying I advocate Silverlight over a regular ASP.NET web part. The reason I was doing that is because every time you use a WCF service with a web part, you have to make sure you configure in some way, shape, or form your web.config. And so that means you take some information, app.config, put it in web.config, and there's a little bit of a dance you have to do there. I didn't want to go through that dance today. I have blogged about it, so if you want to learn more about that, you can check out my blog. But it's a little bit of a dance, but it's still, you can use visual web parts to directly tie into WCF. So there's lots of things that you can do to bring these two technologies together. Remember, under that kind of three banner or the three pillars being reach, resource, and reusability, we'll absolutely flesh that out as we go throughout this year with design patterns, with architecture diagrams, with code kits and things like that, with books. to help you kind of get up to speed, because I know that we're kind of at the top end of people beginning to integrate these two technologies. And more specifically, internally, we're working on a project where we're getting partners involved who are actively working in this area. So we're going to co-market with them and kind of trumpet the things that they're doing out in front of this effort, because, again, we're at the top end, and it's very exciting to see these two things come together. Well, that said, you know, basically call to action. If, you know, I'm sure you've seen the SharePoint VM. I'm sure you probably exposed it to him, didn't you, Mathun, earlier on today, the VM, the IWVM link?
Yeah, so I got a lot of questions. I got a lot of questions for the SharePoint VM. I'll be putting a list of resources from today's presentations, including yours, and we'll send out a mail to all registered attendees.
Awesome.
And I'll also post a link on my blog, and I'm sure you guys will do too. So
yeah,
there'll be
yeah.
more than one ways of getting this information.
Awesome. And so, you know, if I was in your shoes and I was like, well, Steve, this looks interesting, I want to get ramped up, what do I do? You know, obviously you have to have an environment you can code against. So there's the IWVM. There's the easy setup that Paul Stubbs, who's up there waiting for me, he'll talk to you about. And certainly other things here, such as the Azure Developer Center, my blog, and certainly Paul and Donovan Chris's blog on my team. They've got great blogs as well as our SharePoint and Azure training developer kits or developer training kits. So with all that, I will bid you, let me see, we'll just go past that. I'll bid you a thanks. It was a pleasure to give you a really kind of brusque download of SharePoint and Azure. I hope you'll check it out. There's a ton of potential there. And again, if you have any questions, my email address is stefox@microsoft.com. And should we, maybe you want to come down and get set up, and I'll take a question or two while he's getting set up? Is
sure.
that fair?
Yeah.
So I'll take a question or two while Paul's getting set up. You guys done planning your weekends? Is that it? Thanks. All right. Well, no questions. Awesome. You have a question. Yes, ma'am. Supposedly, you absolutely can do Windows Phone or Windows 7. There's some caveats. Yeah, I mean, but in what I showed you there, you could absolutely do a lot of what I showed you. So the question is, you can use Windows 7 as a platform to do your SharePoint coding. In fact, Paul is going to tell you all about the easy setup script that he built specifically for Windows 7, yeah? When you get going? Yes, he will. So I'll tell you all about that. Any other questions? Yes, sir, in the back.
So, from my understanding, it sounds like the SQL Azure may be able to communicate with C5 sometime down the road.
That's a leading question if I ever heard it. So the question was, so am I to assume that there's going to be some sort of communication between SQL Azure and Office 365 in the future? Huh? Have you released that information?
I think the short of that is we don't have any answer on that yet.
Yeah.
But just keep an eye open on the blogs and on the Microsoft Azure WindowsAzure.com site, and you should find more information soon.
There's definitely conversation around it happening. So you can get me with me offline if you want to talk more about it. There was a question over here. Yeah. Can I what?
The style sheet.
Oh, I just used the native default team site. So, yes, I can get you that style sheet.
You may already have it.
Yeah. Little did you know it was that easy. Boom. All right. Yes? Any other questions? You're just stretching? All right. Thank you very much, folks.
Awesome. Thanks, Steve.